On behalf of the Professional Baseball Strength and Conditioning Coaches Society, I'd like to welcome you to the PBSCCS podcast. I'm your host, Chris Messina. All right, everybody, I'm here with Ryan Croton of the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim organization. Ryan, thanks for coming on, man. Appreciate your time. Tell the listeners about yourself, if you would, please.
Yeah, I'm a researcher. I'm a coach. I'm a friend. I carry a lot of relationships in terms of what I do with the Angels. I don't have hobbies. My hobby is work. And I find that, you know, what we do in the human performance side is just fascinating. It's such a fast moving discipline where you're looking at different technologies to help, you know, answer questions that we have. And the research just keeps pumping and pumping out. And, you know, that I'm very grateful. I think for all of us as coaches, I think there's a curiosity that keeps coming, you know, for us in this field. So, my current role with the Angels, I am the director of performance integration, and I basically integrate performance. And it's you know, at the intersection of a lot of processes, which I'm involved in, and super grateful, you know, to be with this organization. Billy Eckler, the GM, is phenomenal, super forward thinking, kind of guy that strength and conditioning is like at the top of his list. And, you know, anybody that gets to work for a guy like this, hopefully in their own organization, is really going to see the value of what they bring to the floor and the training that goes on.
Yeah, it sounds like you are wearing a lot of hats. And so the hobbies time might be limited for you.
I try to golf. You know, my wife's an avid golfer. We just have a new son, Casey. He's 15 months old. And it's kind of difficult for us to get out and do our thing. But when I'm able to go out and enjoy the outdoors, and I suck. My wife is tremendous at the game. I really enjoy it. I play for the fun of it. Some people get pretty animated when they play. And when I shank them, I just pick up another ball.
Kudos to you, because I don't have the patience for golf. I've played once. I broke a couple clubs, and that was the end of it for me. So.
Yeah, well, I wasn't allowed to do that. I mean, when I first met my my wife, you know, the rules were no breaking clubs and no swearing. She was really big. She's super big on etiquette, really devoted to the game. I mean, the first time we played, we both played for the intermediates, and she shot like a high 70 score and cried because it was such a good score. Like, I've never been in a recreational setting where someone's actually cried over their performance. So I thought, you know, this is the right woman for me. You
know? So she's intense, man. She's into it. That's good.
Yeah.
So I want to get right into it here. What do you believe makes a strength and conditioning coach successful, maybe in general and then more specifically in professional baseball?
I think a successful it's tough for me to call them strength and conditioning coaches. I call them performance coaches in this field. Is They need to have an understanding of multiple departments, in my opinion. They have to be able to create strong relationships with people. I think in our field, you know, we play the psychologist sometimes, where we get to know the athlete on a whole different level than anybody who's uniformed, potentially even in the medical side. So we have to be able to deal with, you know, the privacy of understanding how our athletes feel. We have to be actionable with it. So if we find something that's really a big problem, we have to be able to converse with the right people to get it done. And I think we have to have a general openness to learn. I think that's what makes us very successful, is that professional humility to say, I don't know enough, teach me, you know, and then also have the other type of behavior where if somebody like a pitching coach or a hitting coach or somebody else comes in and they're questioning things, not to get defensive, but to explain why.
Yeah, that goes a long way, man. If you can just sit with the coaches and just talk, and sometimes it feels like they're just testing you to see like if they can get under your skin and get you rattled. And sometimes they are genuinely curious. And if you can just sit down and have those conversations, it goes a long way for them trusting you to work with their guys, so to speak. And then, like you said, those guys are going to open up to you more so than probably anybody else that they're around. You see them every day between stretch and lifting and even just in the dugout. So being able to build those strong relationships really does go a long way.
Yeah.
So what do you believe in within strength and conditioning that others think you are crazy for believing? You're wearing a lot of hats. You're seeing a lot of things. You're doing a lot of things. What do you think is crazy?
I think, I've talked to a lot of leaders in the field, and I feel like athletes don't give huge concern in terms of what we say. I know we're always giving cues. We're always trying to give them more external, thought processes and how to move. But the way that these athletes move in self-organized ways is something that, they really don't take in the information in their body. They figure out how they're going to self-organize to make a movement, based on the task you give them, the environment that you put them in, and their internal constraints, ranges of motion and those kinds of things. So I feel like the athlete does a great job of self-organizing. And, the other thing is understanding what the right amount of strength is. We're in the strength field, and, we want to push for stronger athletes, but, some guys don't need a certain level of strength where others do. So, for me, some of the elements of that bigger, faster, stronger doesn't always equate, in terms of skill and coordination. So those are kind of a couple of those things is, it's kind of tough because different experiences in different sports, we associate a lot with what we do as strength, where on our side and what we do with the Angels is I'm more focused in coordination. So those are some of the, than the raw X's and O's of, increasing somebody's squat or pressing capability, those kinds of things.
Yeah, I was having a talk with somebody the other day. I can't remember who it was, but we were just discussing the difference between like a 500 pound squat and a 525 pound squat. Like, does it really matter that much in comparison to being able to use those like energy resources somewhere else that might benefit the player more than just, being able to brag, hey, I got 525 on my squat instead of 500. You know what I mean? So I definitely understand what you're talking about there with sometimes enough strength is enough and you need to go elsewhere for other improvements, areas of improvement.
Yeah.
So what advice do you have for others in the field, maybe for some young coaches that are looking to get into the field or even older coaches that have been around who just want to stay on top of the game? What advice do you have?
Learn from as many people as possible. Don't be so fixed in the technicalities of training where I feel like, you need to be around good business leaders. Kind of take in what your parents have given you, because in some ways, we need to be a parent figure to some of these athletes, to help them make good decisions. If you want to be successful, you have to have gratitude. I'm a spiritual person. I believe God above puts us in a great place. We got to be thankful for that. And we have to really be able to acknowledge our families, because this job is unlike any other. I got friends that are in football, hockey, some of those days in the week, they're working like a banker's hours, and we're on the grind. I mean, we talk about playing 162, and I think it's, you're looking for 187 or whatever that number is to get you through to the ring, which you have had. And so that's really important. I think advice, if you're a leader in the field and you're managing a group of athletes or a group of coaches, it's important that you show them that you're competitive about your job, that you're willing to outwork everybody in the room. You have to have that mindset. And at the same token, when really great things happen for you in your structure and system, you have to look out the window for praise and you know, let those people know, because they're the ones that are really doing the grunt work, making you look good. But then when things don't go well, you got to look in the mirror. You got to be able to look in the mirror and point at yourself and say, I got to do better. I have to improve. So those are that's the advice I have for, you know, people that are up and coming in the field and people that are managing a team of strength coaches.
Yeah, my wife trying to explain like the life that she has to live following me around and like living the baseball life. It's almost like comical in a weird way to like hear her talk about it. And people just don't grasp like what's going on in the baseball world or for us as coaches and like how that affects our family. And so, like you said, I'm forever grateful for all the sacrifices she makes and my family back home in New York that they make, and they may never understand what we do. But you know, it goes a long way to have those support figures. And then being able to self-reflect, like you said, it's really hard to do sometimes. But when things go wrong, like the first person to look at is just look at yourself in the mirror, figure out what you can do better to help other people be better. And it's easier said than done. It's very hard to do sometimes, but right there with you. Really, really good advice all around there, man. So kind of along those lines of learning and continuing to stay on top of things, where are you going for continuing ed? Are you reading books? Are you attending seminars? Are you listening to podcasts? Where are you going to keep the sword sharp?
Oh, man, everything. One thing that I was at a presentation that mentioned that only 10% of coaches read white papers, like read actual research papers, the 10%. And the problem is, in this day and age, we're getting information so fast and people are summarizing all this research and providing us with outcomes. Where I feel in the field we're making mistakes is that we don't dig up those papers and we don't look at the methods. We don't look at the populations. And so when you consider what you read in a sense of who the people are that's experienced some kind of intervention or process, it's hard to fully, you know, grasp the reality of what you're reading and what you want to apply. So I really push people to read literature. You know, there's good stuff on PubMed. If people haven't, you know, if they don't really know where to go and kind of collect abstracts, ResearchGate, it's worth, you know, having a profile on there so that, you know, you have a little bit more access to papers that you might not be able to download. I think Google Scholar is a really good place that people can go and get information. You know, some of the classic books I dig through. One of them, Super Training, by Sif and Verkhoshansky. It's pretty detailed. I think if you can start to pull some elements from there and do a deeper dive, if there's things that you don't understand, reach out to people. There's a lot of good nuggets in there. I like Bartholomew's Conscious Coaching. I think that's a really important read for our field, is just, you know, understanding the personalities, like, you know, who's highly technical, you know, who's talented and takes that talent into the weight room and they are aversive, and you know, who, understanding all these different personalities that are described in that book, I think are really, really impactful. You know, I don't have a ton of time when I'm on the floor because I'm managing everything and I'm kind of pulled in a lot of different directions. But one thing I do notice is I pay attention to how my coaches interact. And I think, you know, people that read that book, they'll be able to categorize their athletes in a little bit better way and be able to approach them. There's a great book that I read, you know, those that, you know, I hope everybody aspires to be in a leadership role, is called Good to Great by Jim Collins. It's an economics based book, where he's taken all this research and they've explored what makes companies just, you know, hit this apex faster than others, companies that have really turned themselves around. And I think that's a great read, because an expression I have with my department is like, I want to get the right people on the bus. And they talk about this, and getting people in the right seats based on their personalities. So like I brought in the football guy that like there was some much needed energy in a, in one of our locations. They get a lot of rainouts. You know, the only thing that's really accessible is the weight room, and you're trying to motivate athletes that can't get on the field, can't demonstrate what they're capable of doing, and they need to do this to be able to be promoted, and you got all this bad weather. You need to be able to understand putting that right person in there that is going to spark those guys, you know, amidst all the adversity that they got to deal with in the season. So, you know, those are some things. I really think the winter meetings are great. You know, some people, I don't know, they might have mixed reviews, but some of the speakers that they bring in for those that are in the professional circuit in Major League Baseball, I really think they should talk to their coordinators and get some movement in front office to get traction to have people out to see, you know, some of these presenters, because I think the material is really good and it's a great dynamic from peer to peer. So
yeah, for sure, tons of good stuff there, man. I'm a big fan of Coach Bartholomew's book. Just like you said, you're able to interact with guys a little bit differently and kind of sort into like who goes where and in terms of athletes, and oh, okay, this guy might learn this way, but this guy might learn this way, this guy is going to reject this kind of coaching versus that kind of coaching. So it's been coming up more and more as a recommended book more recently, which is good. That means other coaches are reading it and helping themselves and helping their athletes. So I don't want to keep you from your child and your wife, but I'd like to do a lightning round with you. What do you think? You got time?
Yeah, that's okay. Yeah, I think about it. Yeah,
keep all the questions coming, right?
Okay.
First one: who is your biggest influence in the field of strength and conditioning?
Oh man, I mean, there is a lot of people that I'd love to name and say thank you for. I'm gonna, you know, across, I've had experiences in sports medicine with some great surgeons, Dr. Kelly, who I got to work with, and Steve Thomas at Penn. There's my professor, Dr. Dan Ramsey. That guy, he believed in me. I had a very different research approach where I was studying the lower body mechanics of a pitcher, and it was in a lab that they've really never seen an overhead athlete. And he really, you know, that guy really was with me day in, day out. And I thought about quitting a lot of times. That guy, I really got to recognize. As far as specifics in the weight room, I think my first biggest influence is Brady Anderson, who's the VP of the Baltimore Orioles. It's just, you know, he gives a different dimension being a former player and someone who is highly competent in the weight room. And, you know, he's also quite interesting as far as how he trains himself. You know, I don't want to reveal his age, but, he's older and, he has incredible speed features. Just a cheetah, that guy. Paul Childress and Buddy Morris. When I was in Buffalo and I came in, I really wanted to get an idea of where I could get an internship or grad assistantship. And I remember when I first got accepted, I walked over to the weight room and he was having a session with a bunch of people, Buddy was, and some of his coaches. And I asked him, he kind of looked at me and I asked him, is there any opportunity to assist him on a voluntary basis? And he asked me what I was doing at school and he laughed. He's like, you know, you're taking your PhD, but in this room, you're going to actually learn something. And, he was tremendous. I mean, just the detail of what he showed me as a professional. I mean, I used to have to take the rack to work with a football team that was closest to the whiteboard because the tempos I could never remember. Like the level of detail that this guy puts into his training is off the charts. And, if you can read stuff by him, listen to Buddy Morris. I think so. Paul Childress, the same. He's a, you know, former world record holder in the squat from Buffalo, 1205, in the Masters division. Just tons of knowledge about overtraining and other aspects that, you know, he's dealt with as a competitive athlete. I guess the third biggest influences, one that's been really recent to me, and I'd say it's Lee Fiocchi, who's our major league coordinator. He's just a consummate professional, diligent, always willing to try something new. And he always has, you know, a good feel in terms of how that should be implemented. So those individuals, you know, I'm really grateful for. They're my influences.
Yeah, those are some really, really good names. And the Buffalo Tree, it makes you strong just living there, man. And then you got to be with Buddy and you got Paul. Like, that's an incredible influence on your career.
Yeah.
One piece of equipment to train with, what would it be?
My staff would know this, and it's definitely a computer.
Computer, okay.
Yes, I am definitely big on looking at all the checks and balances of training. One thing I really have a hard time with, I like to be fluid, but I do like to have a plan and a process, and I like to have some basic way that, you know, I'm able to look up things and access them quicker to make those decisions. You know, if I have an athlete, I can't remember. And that's the one thing about Brady that was amazing. He'd train an athlete. He'd never write down a note, and he would remember, yeah, last time we did front squat, you went up, you know, 80 kilos, you then went 110 kilos and you had 120 kilos. He just remembered these things. It was like 10 days that he hasn't really been in the weight room and dropped in to get in on the session. And a computer for me just keeps me, you know, keeps me focused and allows me to look at a lot of different avenues of training.
I gotcha. Yeah, that makes sense. And I've also heard Brady still gets after it, even to this day, despite age. So,
he's amazing. Amazing athlete. You know, stole 300 plus bases. I'll give you a quick story on him that my first year at Baltimore's camp, we were running 40s. And he dusted everybody that decided to run. It was never enforced, but anybody that decided to run, we had a 40 yard turf patch that was lined, could race. And literally he beat everybody at camp except Brian Roberts. I was amazed. And you know, not even a couple A skips and boom, let's go. Like, he's just unbelievable. Yeah.
That's so awesome. I bet that was so cool to see.
Yeah, it was.
Biggest accomplishment professionally and or personally?
Oh, yeah, this is easy. So number one would be being a father. So I'm going to work backwards. So being a father. Number two, married. You know, finding my wife, finding a partner. Who can explore this journey with me, you know, cause as you know, this field is hard. So that's a huge accomplishment to find somebody that's willing to, you know, travel down the road with you. The third would be earning my PhD. That was a big accomplishment. And when I think back, man, like I remember every year I questioned myself and there's just all these people that were in my corner, they wouldn't let me quit. So that was a huge accomplishment. And it makes me reflect on all the people that helped me through that process.
The support goes a long way, man. It really, really does. It's hard to do things by yourself, at least to that magnitude. Any career other than strength and conditioning? This is the last one. What would you choose?
Oof. It's tough because I don't have a hobby, right? Like other than being a major league baseball player, I mean, I'd love to be one of those. I would be a sports science professor. I think I would want to teach others how to be sports scientists. I think that would be fun, you know, in some kind of field of analytics.
Can't get away from teaching others, man, and educating them.
Right.
Well, I appreciate your time, man. And if the listeners want to get in touch with you, where can we get more from you? Are you on social media or is there a better way to get in touch with you?
I don't have social media. I think the best way to get a hold of me is by email, and I'll do my best to get to respond. I'm a pretty busy guy, but if there's burning questions and I can, you know, pretty quickly give some insight. My email is ryan.croton@angels.com. So I'll do my best that I can, you know, communicate, but I don't do social media, not really, other than pictures of my family and, you know, play things I like to eat. That's about it. You know?
The important things in life.
Yeah.
Well, I appreciate you coming on, man, and spend some time with me, and we'll be catching up soon.
Okay, man, I really appreciate it. And again, I wish you the best for next year, and I'm really happy for you and what the Red Sox has done this year.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it. All right, everybody, that concludes this episode with Ryan. I hope you enjoyed this one. Three things that I took from Ryan: learn from as many people as you can, build strong relationships, and have an understanding of multiple departments. With that being said, I hope you enjoyed this episode, and we'll talk to you again on the next one.